Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. It is always a pleasure to be able to talk with Ralph Nader. In my view, he is an American hero. He is not only a veteran consumer advocate, a best-selling author, and a three-time independent candidate for president, but he's the author of the new book, The Rebellious CEO, 12 Leaders Who Did It Right. And this is my first opportunity to talk with him since he has become a nonagenarian. Mr. Nader, it's great to talk with you again. How does it feel to be 90 years old?
It feels good. Thank you, Frank.
A happy birthday. I guess it beats the alternative. Tell me about this book, The Rebellious CEO. Why did you write this book?
Well, you know, over the years, as you know, I've been very critical of CEOs of giant companies presiding over corporate crime, fraud, not paying their fair share of taxes, and stripping power from the shareholders, and mistreating workers, all the things that newspapers sometimes at their best write about. But then I realized that there's no framework to evaluate them, because when you criticize them, they often say, we're just meeting market demand. Don't blame us. It's just a market. We're meeting market demand. Well, they can manipulate markets. Monopolies manipulate markets. Corporate crime, advertising, deception, subsidies that are unfair to small business, given to big business. There are all kinds of ways you can manipulate markets. So I thought, well, you know, over the years, I've known some CEOs of successful businesses who got it right, who did it right. So I wrote this book, The Rebellious CEO, 12 CEOs who got it right. And they had very many of the same characteristics, Frank. First of all, they didn't overpay themselves. They wanted to set an example for their workers. Second, they reversed the business model, like the Herb Kelleher, who started Southwest Airlines, challenging the big airline cartel out in Texas. He first treats his workers well. They treat the consumers well, the passengers, and that makes money, and that makes the shareholders happy. So that's the way the business model. The precondition was not just some vision of huge profits, and then we're going to squeeze the workers and consumers to maximize profits. I once called them up, and I said, Herb, thank you for making consumers the first priority. He said, I'm not making it first priority. The workers, he called them people. Our people are first priorities because they're the ones who are going to make the airline passenger consumers happy to make them come back and fly Southwest Airlines. And the others, they focused on profits in the best way, because they knew without the profits, they couldn't do all these other things and speak out for public causes. They would criticize other companies in their own industry the way Anita Roddick did, who ran the body shop. She started the body shop franchises around the world. She would rip into the cosmetic industry for exploiting with junk, she called it, young women, and making them feel insecure, overcharging them, and sometimes harming their skin. So they would also admit their mistakes in public, Frank. Gino Pelucci, who ran a lot of restaurants and a lot of Chinese food companies, with Chinese food, he pioneered that area. He would admit publicly when he goofed, and this restaurant closed because I didn't do it right, as if they wanted pressure so they wouldn't postpone and cover up. So they were very forthright people, and they always made a profit. So I thought it's good to have a comparison. So business students coming out of business school can have a framework, and they can say to these big CEOs, hey, you're not doing it right. These people did it right, and they made profit, and they made the people coming to work happy. So these sleepless people in your audience who are suffering from insomnia should love this book, because it's a lot of story after storytelling about one of these companies after another that they've never heard of. And it's good news, and once in a while, we got to have good news, right?
Absolutely. That's one of the things we try to focus on the show. I loved learning about these stories of a lot of these individuals that I had never heard of. And I think a lot of the audience will as well. How did you pick these dozen? Could you have done, understanding what they all have in common, could you have done 25 or 30 if you wanted to? Or is having a CEO that embodies all of the characteristics you focus on here really that rare of a thing? And was it a stretch to get to 12?
Well, the criteria was, do I know these CEOs? So I couldn't get more than a dozen, because I had to have known them, have talked with them, have told them things they could do, had listened to them. And so to answer your question, I ran out after about a dozen.
Understood. One of the people, I'm not going to go through all 12 of these here because people should check out the book, and we only have a finite amount of time. But one of the people that you talk about here, I first learned about because you had made him a character in your fictional book, Only the Super Rich Can Save Us, which is a terrific book. And I had certainly heard of The Price Club, but I don't know that I was too familiar with Saul Price. Tell folks about Saul Price. What was it that made him so unique?
Well, he was amazing. He was born in New York, and he moved as a young man to California, went to law school, and started a retail business, and saw that the big retail department stores were leaving a vacuum in terms of discounting. So he started the big box stores that Target and Sam's stores and others copied. And he was quite a free thinker, too. For example, he was very critical of grand juries as being too one-sided. As the saying goes, a grand jury could indict a ham sandwich because there's no one defending the accused. He was talking more in terms of street crime, defenseless people. So he would put ads in papers. He would go to Congress and push for a wealth tax. Here is a wealthy man, and he wanted a 1% wealth tax. He said, we're not paying our fair share of taxes. There's got to be a wealth tax. I said, well, how much luck did you have, Saul, with him? He said, well, I would talk to him. They'd sit and listen because I contributed to their campaigns. But then they would get up and say, it ain't going to happen. Then they'd drift away, and I'd never hear from them again. So he was a citizen. He was a corporate leader. He was an innovator. He passed away just before Amazon got underway. And in the book, I say that there are people who are saying, Jeff Bezos would have had a different kind of competitor than the competitors he had as he overwhelmed them with the Amazon model. That's how creative Saul Price was. He also treated his workers very well. He defended Palestinian rights as a Jewish American. He defended Palestinian rights and funded technical training, occupational training in the Palestinian territories. He was a man of great integrity, and I'm glad that I had an opportunity to profile him in the book, The Rebellious CEO. Each story is different in ways. They had different personalities, but very common characteristics of how to run business more in the public interest.
What do you think other leaders, maybe in other professions or people that are not CEOs, can learn from these 12? What inspiration can folks draw from them in their own lives, professionally, politically, or in any other respect?
Well, first, they can learn to put business in the right priority. It's not first and foremost to make profit at any cost to consumers, to workers, to the environment, to public policy. That's what I mean by they reversed the business model. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing for millions of business students, whether they take night classes or day classes, to learn. And also, not to dissemble. Speak the truth. Speak out. admit your mistakes publicly. There is Bo Rapoport was head of an income American Income Life Insurance. He demanded that the workers create a union, and he joined it himself. You know, unions are almost unheard of in insurance companies. And Gino Pelucci, he created 75 companies and demanded that there be unions in every company. And he never had a strike in 48 years, not one strike. Wow. So there's a lot that people can learn, because otherwise they just copy the routine omnicidal model of the global corporation with climate catastrophe and supporting dictators abroad if they make them money and pushing for a bigger military budget at the expense of domestic necessities for the people here at home. That's not a model you want, not wanting to pay their taxes. The Trump tax cut led to dozens of more profitable companies paying no federal income tax on profits made in the U.S. A lot of the banks are paying 3-4% on huge profits, insurance companies. So these people in the Rebellious CEO book, they paid their taxes. They never whined about regulation because they were way ahead of the regulators. Mm-hmm. Way ahead. Mm-hmm. The Interface Corporation was the first company to go carbon neutral. They're the biggest carpet tile manufacturer out of Atlanta in the world. And they went carbon neutral. And Ray Anderson, who was the CEO and the founder, he would laugh at EPA standards. He was so far ahead of them. In terms of recycling, reducing waste, reducing water usage, reducing pollution, and so on. So there's a lot to learn for business school students. I hope anyone listening to this program, business school teacher, teacher of business courses, will get this book. It'll give the students a sense of optimism, a sense that they don't have to just adhere to one global corporate model that has no concern with communities other than to abandon them for dictatorships abroad who know how to keep workers in their place.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Ralph Nader. His new book is The Rebellious CEO, 12 Leaders Who Did It Right. Ralph, I have to ask you about an issue we've been covering a great deal on the program, and that has to do with Boeing, specifically the problems they've been having with the 737 MAX. Obviously, this has gotten a great deal of attention since this panel flew off mid-flight, this Alaska Airways flight, and now the head of the Boeing 737 MAX division has been fired. You've been all over this because, unfortunately, 4 years ago this week, your niece was killed in a flight that where she was only 24 years old, working for a nonprofit organization. And you've been calling for reform to Boeing and a lot of the things that they've been doing. Have they been making any improvements as a company? And if not, what do they need to be doing and what do regulators need to be doing?
Well, the Justice Department now has a few days left to decide whether to let the deferred prosecution criminally of Boeing expire or start it all over again because they misbehaved and didn't meet the conditions of the deferred prosecution agreement, which is a sweetheart deal that Justice Department exercises regardless of Democrat or Republican with big corporations. They don't have the number of lawyers to match the thousands of corporate lawyers that can delay these cases endlessly, among other reasons why they cave and have sweetheart deals. And they didn't go after the top executives, and that's the problem, apropos your question. It's still the same management. The CEO had to resign with $65 million severance pay. But the board of directors, CEO Calhoun and others are still in charge. Same management. They've made a few changes in order so they don't have to make fundamental changes. So that's unacceptable. And all of this is spilling out now because you have whistleblowers from the production line in Boeing who retired or quit blowing the whistle on subordinating engineering standards to souped up fast assembly lines, trying to pump out as many of these 737 MAX 10 a month as possible. And you suffer from quality control deficiency that way. Now, they got away with it, you know. They didn't get fired. They didn't get prosecuted. And all they've paid out so far is insurable, deductible, and sometimes depreciable. And it didn't come from their pockets, the top top executives. So what do you expect? There's no law and order. There's no accountability. Now the FAA is getting tougher. They put out a report saying there's a lot of problems in production quality control. But they got to go to the basic design of the 727, which is using a fuselage that was designed in the 1960s. They didn't design a new car, a new plane in 2011 to compete with Airbus. They just hooked up the 737 MAX, and you know the result. Crashes in Indonesia, crashes in Ethiopia, and all kinds of near misses that pilots have reported to a little-known database run by NASA in order to encourage anonymous reporting by concerned pilots who've had close calls with the 737 MAX.
Handling legal matters is stressful. So, let the law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. provide you with the insightful counsel you deserve. The law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. has successfully handled thousands of cases for 25-plus years. They focus on elder law and estate planning, but are equipped to navigate you through all stages of family law and divorce to real estate law and probate. The law offices of Frank Bruno. Call 718-418-5000 or visit them at frankbrunolaw.com. That's frankbrunolaw.com. Frank Bruno. He's your numero uno.
Ralph, I'll end with this. Obviously, a lot of younger listeners know you from your multiple runs for president. This year, it looks like we're heading towards a Trump versus Biden rematch. These are two people with very high unfavorables. And a lot of folks are saying this could really be the year that a third party or independent candidate breaks through. On the left, you have Jill Stein and Cornel West, as well as some others running. You have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running sort of a left-right center populist campaign. No Labels is talking about running a centrist candidate, and I'm sure there'll be some conservative alternatives as well. Given your experience, Ralph, knowing how difficult it is to even get on the ballot, let alone, you know, try to get into the debates or get your message heard by the media and the voters, do you think this could be the year where a third party candidate can break through and have a meaningful impact on the race?
Well, they're too much top-down, Frank. There's not enough grassroots mobilization. And unfortunately, most of the American people believe that only one of two candidates can win, and they want to be with a winner. Even though when they're polled, they would like a viable third party. About 65% say they want a viable third party, but they don't vote for third party. The other thing is what you pointed out, very hard to get on the ballot. You don't get on the debates. You can't reach tens of millions of people. These presidential debates, if they occur, they have audiences of 50 to 100 million people. Can you imagine how many arenas you have to fill in this country to even come close? How are you going to reach people? How are people going to know you're running when the mass media blocks you out? Apart from all the other problems of gerrymandering, winner-take-all, no proportional representation, electoral college victories repudiating popular vote victories such as for George Bush and Trump in 2016. So I don't see it happening anytime soon. The barriers are too high, but the mindset, we grow up being taught by Scholastic magazine as kids, there are only two parties. You vote Democrat or vote Republican. The other thing is, there is a lot of dissent among people against both parties. They ought to mobilize a negotiating team and meet with them now in the spring and basically say, here are our conditions. Here is the agenda. We want it in writing, you support it, and we want you to start putting bills in Congress to support it with deeds and actions. Otherwise, we're not going to vote for you. There's no sense of bargaining. It's kind of a take it or leave it in November.
Ralph Nader, it is always a treat to talk with you. And if there's any justice in this world, we'll be talking for the next 90 years because your voice is badly, badly needed. And you add such an important perspective to so many affairs. And I could talk with you all day. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Frank. Thank you for reading my materials like no talk show host does in America.
Thank you, Ralph Nader. Check out the new book, The Rebellious CEO. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you could do so. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.